And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, the 11th of June, 2015. And I suggest you have a pencil and paper handy, because that way you could take some notes. If something tickles your fancy, if you get incensed by something you hear and you want to do something about it, you might get a web page, email address, telephone number, something, location, something that can help you out along the way. Let's start off with announcements. There will be a Carmel River graffiti and trash abatement this coming Saturday, June 13th. For the past 2 years, the Steinbeck Country Chapter of Trout Unlimited has been working to clean up the fishing access to the Salinas River at Highway 1. On Saturday, June 13th, the chapter will focus its attention on the Carmel River. Also beginning at Highway 1, illegal campers have been residing along the Carmel River behind the Crossroads Shopping Center, creating a mess and posing potential public safety concerns. Although the campers have been evicted, their trash remains, as well as graffiti on the bridge footings. Almost every bridge along the Carmel River has been tagged. The number of volunteers we get for June 13th will determine how far we progress upstream and whether or not we break up into small teams. Volunteers should bring work gloves, heavy boots, waders, any tools to help pick up trash. It might be useful to have a brimmed hat, sunglasses, and sunscreen. Paint will be provided, as well as some painting tools, so you might bring a brush or a roller or something like that. If you're a Trout United member, or if you're not, and you're interested in helping, please contact Jeff at CentralCoastFlyFishing.com. That's G-E-O-F-F, that kind of Jeff. Once again, G-E-O-F-F at CentralCoastFlyFishing.com, or you could give him a call, 831-626-6586. For further details, that number again, 831-626-6586, and that's this Saturday, June 13th, down at Carmel River behind the Crossroads Shopping Center. Get that stuff cleaned up. Rebel, Rebuild, and Rewild 2015, the Canadian Earth First Rendezvous, will be taking place north of Ottawa. Still don't have a location for this one, but I can give you some information about where to find out. It's going to be taking place June 22nd through the 28th, and that's coming up a week away, roughly. It's an eco-anarchist action camp, learn skills, all that kind of stuff. If you want some more information, write to Rebel, Rebuild, Rewild at RiseUp.net. That's Rebel, Rebuild, Rewild at RiseUp.net. And maybe they can give you some more information. I haven't been able to figure it out. Anyway, the Round River Rendezvous, the U.S. version of the Earth First Rendezvous, will be taking place the 1st through the 8th of July in the Green Mountains. And you can get more details on the Earth First Journal site. And on the 14th of June, they will be giving out details about how to actually get there. It is a Round River Rendezvous. All the usual prescriptions and proscriptions apply. Leave your dogs and your FBI agents at home. Bring your best attitude and your best beer. But once again, the Earth First Journal, and that's .org, is the place to find out more information. And like I said, in a few days, they might even have the location. Once again, the 1st through the 8th of July in the Green Mountains. And the California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter, is having a restoration this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Baldwin Creek in Wilder Ranch State Park. They are going back to Baldwin Coastal Bluffs to continue work on mustard, cape ivy, and hemlock removal. They will meet at Wilder Ranch and carpool to the destination. Go north or west out of Santa Cruz, depending on which way you think you are going, and continue to the turnoff on the left-hand side for Wilder Ranch. I guess it does start to get a little northerly there as you're around the corner. Watch for the sign indicating a left turn once at the kiosk. Tell the person that you are volunteering for the coastal cleanup, and they will give you a parking pass. Meet the group at the interpretive sign by the bathrooms in the parking lot. And once again, that's 10 a.m. this coming Saturday, and meet at Wilder Ranch State Park. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands in Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places like the Baldwin Creek area. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They'll show you how to pull weeds. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing. It might be foggy, it might be warm. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. Probably no rain, but it might get a bit warm or windy. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and your water. If you have questions or want further information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net. Or go to the website, www.cruzcnps.org. Moving to news, Hanakivi, Finland, sabotage of Fennovo Oymas nuclear power plant construction site. And this communique was received anonymously by the Earth First Newswire. On the night of Monday, the 8th of June, a digger was sabotaged on the construction site of the Fennovoimas planned nuclear power plant. Cables and wires were cut and the windows were smashed. The individuals who made the action on the 8th of June represent themselves and no organization or network of activists. The mainstream media first reporting the attack, the newspaper Kaleva, chose to remove focus from the crimes the action was a response to, and instead focused on the leakage of hydraulic oil in a gravel pit of a clear-cut area that used to be a forest of Hanhikivi Cape, inhabited by many endangered species. As usual, the chosen methods of individuals conducting the action became the focus, not the massively destructive project of the nuclear power plant itself. What the media calls vandalism was a conscious act of sabotage, a method that has always had an important role in the struggle against oppressive systems of exploitation, where the interests of corporate power always goes before the needs and the existence of local people and nature. The writing of new laws as the project goes on, giving corporations like Fennovoima the right to forced expropriation of the land, shows how far from a democratic process this is, and also how laws are made to serve the interests of corporations and not the people or the planet. The construction of a nuclear power plant is never a democratic process, and decisions concerning these kinds of energy systems are made far above the heads of ordinary people. So far, the channels offered by the so-called democratic system have not had any effect on the ongoing project and the preparation of the construction site for the planned nuclear reactor. Emphasis on planned, the application for the building has not even yet gone through, and the project lacks the necessary percentage of domestic investors for the application to be approved by the state. Now is a critical point to show the companies already involved and the possible investors that this will be a difficult route to pursue. All companies, big and small, involved, profiting from the destruction of the Hanhikivi Cape and the creation of yet another massive nuclear problem for present and future generations, need to feel that this is not a good idea. This is only the beginning. In solidarity with the protest camp of Hanhikivi Cape and with the locals resisting forced expropriation. And we read about that story a week or two ago. Basically, the company came in, said, "Your summer camp cabin isn't here anymore," and told everybody they had to leave. And down in Mozambique, Africa, police seize 1.5 tons of poached rhino horn and ivory. In this story by Manuel Macari, editing by Helen Nyambura Murwawa and Kevin Liffey of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Mozambican police have seized nearly 1.3 metric tons of ivory and rhino horn, that's about a ton and a half as we know it, obtained from the illegal slaughter of 65 rhinos and 170 elephants in a house belonging to a Chinese national. Mozambique is a major source of poachers willing to cross the porous border with South Africa to fill orders for rhino horn from criminal syndicates in East Asia, where some consider it to have medicinal properties. Undoubtedly, this is a case related to poaching. Some ivory pieces still have fresh blood, a sign that some animals may have been recently killed, a police spokesman said on Thursday. Last year, South Africa, home to more than 80% of the world's rhinos, lost an estimated 1,215 of the animals to poachers, and many of them were in Kruger National Park, which borders Mozambique. While poaching of elephants is rare in South Africa, more than 20,000 elephants were killed elsewhere on the continent in 2013, and conservationists say the number now being killed is probably exceeding the number being born. Almost all trade in elephant ivory and rhino horns is banned worldwide to try and save the animals from extinction. Mozambique police said their haul consisted of 340 elephant tusks weighing about 1,160 kilograms, and the 65 rhino horns weighed about 124 kilograms. And most of that stuff is valued on the market at its weight in gold or better. World animals dying off, facing extinction due to endless California drought. In this story by Daryl Fears of the Santa Fe, New Mexican, as found on the Earth First Newswire. For the giant kangaroo rat, death by nature is normally swift and dramatic, a hopeless dash for safety, followed by a blood-curdling squeak as their bellies are torn open by eagles, foxes, bobcats, and owls. But they're not supposed to die the way they are today, emaciated and starving, their once abundant population dwindling to near nothing on California's sprawling Carrizo Plain, about 100 miles northwest of Los Angeles, where the drought is turning hundreds of thousands of acres of grassland into a desert. Without grass, long-legged kangaroo rats can't eat, and as they go, so go a variety of threatened animals that depend on the keystone species to live. The whole ecosystem changes without the giant kangaroo rat, said Justin Brashears, an associate professor of wildlife ecology and conservation at the University of California, Berkeley. Endangered kangaroo rats are just one falling tile in the drought's domino effect on wildlife in the lower western states. Large fish kills are happening in several states as waters heated by higher temperatures drain and lose oxygen. In Northern California, salmon eggs have virtually disappeared as water levels fall. Thousands of migrating birds are crowding into wetlands shrunk by drought, risking the spread of disease that can cause massive die-offs. As the baking western landscape becomes hotter and drier, land animals are being forced to seek water and food far outside their normal range. Herbivores such as deer and rabbits searching for a meal in urban gardens in Reno are sometimes pursued by hawks, bobcats, and mountain lions. In Arizona, rattlesnakes have come to Flagstaff, joining bears and other animals in search of food that no longer exists in their habitats. You think about it, in our urban environments we have artificial water. We're not relying on creeks, said David Catalano, a supervisory biologist for the Nevada Department of Wildlife. We have sprinkling systems, we have water bushes with fruit and water gardens. And that's just a magnet for everything. We've seen an increase in coyote calls, bear calls, mountain lion calls, all the way to mice and deer, Catalano said of residents placing distress calls to his department. At your house, everything is green and growing and flowering, and they're just being drawn to it. The State Wildlife Agency said it's preparing for a deluge of calls reporting bear sightings from Lake Tahoe this summer when berries and other foods they eat disappear for lack of rain. About 4,000 mule deer have disappeared from a mountain range near Reno between late last year and now, likely because of drought. Our level of concern is very high, Catalano said. Nevada has placed low fiberglass pools called guzzlers that hold up to 3,600 gallons of water at more than 1,000 wilderness areas across the state to provide water for wildlife. The Arizona Game and Fish Department sent a message for a second year to residents in Flagstaff near Grand Canyon National Park. Don't be surprised if you see more wild animals around town in the next few months. Drought conditions may cause creatures such as elk, deer, bobcats, foxes, coyotes, and even bears to wander further into town than normal as they seek sources of food and water. Don't feed them, the department warned. Remove pet food, water bowls, garbage cans, and other items that attract wild animals. It does more harm than good. In California, where mandatory water restrictions were passed by the State Water Board recently, humans are already coming into contact with desperate wildlife from the 250,000-acre Carrizo Plain National Monument in California's Central Valley near Bakersfield. Just today, 20 minutes ago, four coyote cubs arrived from Bakersfield outskirts, said Don Richardson, curator of animals for the California Living Museum, which has an animal shelter in the city. We actually get everything from reptiles to mammals, Richardson said. We have 13 San Joaquin kit fox, an endangered species. They were abandoned and orphaned. The kit fox's health was impacted by the struggle to make it with reduced resources. Then, of course, we see lots of birds of prey, owls and golden eagles. The animals are already suffering from the fragmentation of their habitat because of ranching and urban development, and it's looking to be a very, very difficult year for wildlife, Richardson added. Endangered San Joaquin kit fox, coyotes, and birds in the wildlands outside Bakersfield all rely on the giant kangaroo rat to survive, but those rodents are struggling themselves. We fear that the semi-arid grassland is becoming a desert, said Brashears. And the giant kangaroo rat can't survive in a desert. A study by the university recorded a 95% population loss since 2010. Before the drought, 60% of their habitat was covered in grasses they eat and seeds they store for hard times in a network of underground burrows, Brashears said. 4 years of little rain has reduced that cover to 18%. They simply lack food, so they starve, Brashears said. As the state wildfire season approaches, the remaining grasses could be wiped out. For a study, biologists caught a few kangaroo rats this year to probe their condition. They were skinny, Brashears said. We looked at females to see whether they had young, whether they were lactating. They weren't. In this reality where food is scarce and births are few, kangaroo rats are still a top prey item, further shrinking their numbers. The demise of this species would be unthinkable, Brashears said. There's no overstating how important this rodent is to the ecosystem. Few others around to feed snakes, badgers, weasels, and animals already mentioned. Even the soil kangaroo rats dig for burrows creates moist habitat for insects. A worse situation is hard to imagine, said Stafford Lear, chief of fisheries for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. But there is one. Chinook salmon are in great danger, he said. For 2 years, only 5% of their eggs have survived winter and spring migrations because the cold water the eggs need to survive drains from rivers and reservoirs. If you draw down a reservoir, cold water at the bottom drains first, Lara said. To save them, wildlife officials tried to replenish cold water that drained from Shasta Lake north of Sacramento last year. It didn't work, Lara said. 95% of eggs and juvenile brood in 2014 were killed. Those who would be expected to return 3 years later. We also had heavy mortality in 2013, and they're expected back in 2016. The 2015 fish are spawning right now. They're trying everything in our power to have enough cold water in Shasta, so we don't have what we had last year. And salmon are only part of the problem. Smelt are at their lowest number ever recorded in the state. They are a major forage fish feeding other fish and birds in the marine ecosystem. It's part of the heritage resource in the state of California, and it's our responsibility to ensure they are protected, Lear said. Every time you lose something, it puts pressure on the environment. You lose it, and something else will replace it, but it will be lost. They're part of the ecosystem. Millions of dollars have been invested trying to ensure their survival. And Washington State is to break ground on a wildlife bridge over a major highway in this story by Victoria Cavalier, with editing by Peter Cooney, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Bears, cougar, elk, and even lizards will be getting a bridge of their own in Washington, so some of the region's largest and most endangered wildlife can cross a major highway. The Washington State Department of Transportation will break ground next Tuesday on the crossing, which will span Interstate 90, a major thoroughfare that links the Seattle area with eastern Washington as it meanders across the United States, agencies officials said. The 150-foot-long wildlife bridge about 50 miles southeast of Seattle near the Snoqualmie Pass will be the largest of its kind in the state, helping to cut down on collisions between vehicles and animals along a critical connective link in the north-south movement of wildlife living in the Cascade Range, according to the I-90 Wildlife Bridges Coalition. Crews recently built three wildlife tunnels under the highway that are being used by smaller species ranging from coyotes to ducks and otters, said Jen Watkins, a project coordinator with the coalition. We're seeing success even before the work is complete, she said, referring to animal crossings, and it's not rare, it's frequent. The new bridge, which will take about 4 years to complete, will be one of two scheduled to traverse the interstate highway, which is undergoing a $1 billion revamp along a 15-mile stretch to improve safety and widen the corridor to six lanes. About 27,000 cars and trucks use that stretch of interstate each day, according to transportation statistics. The wildlife bridge will accommodate large animals like black bears and elk, as well as smaller species like salamanders, as they shuttle across the highway looking for food and mates, authorities said. Watkins said she expected the crossing to become especially popular as adult animals begin training their young to use it. Scientists also hope the spans will help the recovery of endangered wildlife populations like wolverines and the gray wolf. The bridge will be the second of its kind in Washington, with a smaller crossing already built in Seattle. Wildlife bridges also exist in Colorado and Montana, as well as in European countries, including Germany and the Netherlands. And Costa Rica wants environmental information on the proposed Nicaragua Canal. In this story by Tom Miles, editing by Ruth Pitchford, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Costa Rica wants information from Nicaragua about the potential environmental impact of a planned $50 billion canal project that would rival the Panama Canal, Costa Rican President Luis Guillermo Solis Rivera said on Tuesday. The canal construction plan entails dredging Lake Nicaragua to almost twice its current depth. This could cause sedimentation on the San Juan River, whose southern bank is Costa Rican territory. This is why we asked Nicaragua to tell us how they were planning to prevent the sedimentation of the San Juan River, but we have not received that information, Solis said. The only thing we want is information on possible environmental impacts on Costa Rica, and other than that, we wish them well, Solis told a news conference in Geneva. Nicaragua announced the start of the work on the project in December, saying the proposed 172-mile canal, due to be operational in about 5 years, would raise annual economic growth by more than 10%. Construction of the new waterway is being run by Hong Kong-based HK Nicaragua Canal Development Investment Corporation Limited, also known as the HKND Group, which is controlled by Wang Jing, a Chinese telecom mogul. We understand that this is not a canal that is being supported by the government of Beijing, Solis added. And we turn to biological diversity news. Nearly 88,000 acres proposed to save Florida plants. As part of a settlement with the center, the feds have proposed a project of nearly 8,000 acres for two Florida plants threatened by sea level rise. If the proposal is finalized, more than 4,400 acres will be protected for the Florida semaphore cactus, which may already be declining because of the rising seas, and some 3,400 acres will be protected for the Aboriginal prickly apple, which has already had many of its coastal sites wiped out. Both plants are protected under the Endangered Species Act as a result of a Center for Biological Diversity petition and lawsuit. These native plants are being squeezed out of existence, pressed between coastal development and rising sea levels, said Jacqueline Lopez, the center's Florida director. Habitat protection under the Endangered Species Act will not only save them from extinction, but will help spur South Florida's planning for the rising seas that threatens life as we know it on our coasts. And a suit has been filed to save the Gunnison sage grouse. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies went to court to ensure the Gunnison sage grouse, a unique and lovely bird, gets the strong federal protection it needs. following a pair of Endangered Species Act settlements reached in 2011 with environmental groups. In 2013, the service proposed to designate the sage-grouse as endangered, the most protective status for any species with federal safeguards. Then the agency buckled to pressure from developers, energy corporations, and politicians, downgrading the species to the less protective threatened status last November. The fascinating bird, famous for its showy mating displays, once lived in parts of Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona, but now occurs only in 7 small populations in southwestern Colorado and southeastern Utah. Livestock grazing, oil and gas drilling, motorized recreation, and urbanization have contributed to its ongoing decline. All the science points to the Gunnison sage-grouse being endangered, send the Center for Biological Diversity's Amy Atwood. And here's some news of the weird and wild, the Great Beaver Drop of 1948. Just after World War II, the land around McCall and Piatt Lake in western Idaho bore witness to a human invasion of building. Lakeside homes, docks, and roads replaced wilderness where, for centuries, only beavers had been doing the building, and the two competing mammal species found themselves too close for comfort. So the semi-aquatic rodents received their marching orders. Enter Helmo Heater of the Idaho Fish and Game to mediate the turf war. Heater tinkered with several plans to relocate the beavers into the roadless wilds of what's now called the Frank Church Wilderness, but the same lack of roads made relocation tricky. Ultimately, Heater decided to capitalize on a surplus of parachutes left over from the war. He devised an outrageous and alarming scheme to drop 76 beavers into the wild by parachute, and astonishingly, all but one survived. The paddle-tailed creatures multiplied and took to their new home prodigiously. For more information, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast on this station tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, 9:30 p.m. on Monday nights on 90.3 FM for a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update. And you might try tuning in on the web to northbysouthradio.com. That's northbysouthradio.com. I don't know when they broadcast, and I don't know when they broadcast the Earth First Update, but they tell me they do. So tune them in. They used to be Radio Free Edmonton. And you can always go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net, where you can listen online, or you can download this or any previous Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.